Let's Face the Issues is a daily broadcast ministry of First Conservative Baptist Church with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood. Dr. Youngblood is also the founder, president of Conservative Theological University. Let's Face the Issues broadcast deals with real issues facing our culture today from a biblical perspective. God created three institutions, the home, government, and the church. Therefore, any issue that is harmful or has a negative impact on either of these institutions will be carefully dealt with and confronted from a biblical worldview. Too often, good people are afraid to confront serious issues that are attacking the church, the home, and Christians. We must stand against the enemies of the family and the church. Tune in each day for another broadcast of Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood. Here is Dr. Youngblood with Let's Face the Issues.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mike Hill. I have the honor and pleasure of sitting in for Dr. Gene A. Youngblood this morning. I'm glad to be here. It's always such an honor when Dr. Youngblood asked me to host his show. I'm in the Florida Panhandle, Pensacola area. I'm a small business owner. I've owned an insurance and financial services business for 31 years now. Prior to that, I was a captain in the Air Force, served 10 years in the Air Force after graduating from the Air Force Academy. I'm also a former Florida state representative. I've served from 2013 until 2020 with a brief two-year where I wasn't in office for 2 years during that time. So I served a total of five terms in the Florida State House. We're going to be talking about many issues today, many that I think are important, and we'll start with, of course, what's on almost everyone's mind, and that is the Supreme Court meeting yesterday to determine Mississippi's abortion law. We'll talk a little bit about that. We're going to be talking about also what causes poverty and what are we to do about poverty. And then also we're going to talk about seeing the benefits of the new surge in homeschooling that is taking place, partly as a result of COVID, where parents were exposed to not only the lack of education that their children were receiving, but what they were being taught. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that too. And here's something that is a very interesting article in the Mises Institute. It says, no, healthcare is not a communal resource. Very interesting. I'd like you to join in the discussion today. If you would, just call in at 904-831-0917. That's 904-831-0917. Let's Face the Issues is brought to you in part by Tools for a Time. Tools for a Time is an outdoor dealership company specializing in turnkey business packages for individuals looking to own their own landscape or lawn care business. Tools for a Time also has a full line of hurricane preparedness equipment, including Honda and Echo generators. Tools for a Time staff can answer all of your homeowner and professional and backup power equipment questions. They're located at 11291 Old St. Augustine Road, near the intersection of Old St. Augustine Road and I-295, right at the base of the gigantic 165-foot flagpole with Old Glory flying 24/7. You can reach them online at toolsforatime.com. That's toolsforatime.com. Okay, let's start off today with a comment that I saw from Judge Napolitano. Judge Napolitano is retired judge, of course, and he also was a spokesman at one time on Fox News. So Judge Andrew Napolitano makes a bold prediction for the Supreme Court ruling that they're looking at now concerning abortion. He predicts that they will overturn the Roe v. Wade decision, that abortion will no longer be legal as a federal mandate in the United States. He believes it's going to be a 5-4 decision with Judge Robert going over to the leftist side, joining the three other leftist judges, but that it'll be 5-4, that they will rule in favor of the Mississippi law, which will, in effect, overturn the Roe v. Wade decision that was done. Now, I have a couple of thoughts on this. First off, I hope Judge Napolitano is correct. However, I just don't have a lot of confidence in our Supreme Court. They have gotten so many rulings wrong recently, and even in our distant past, they've had so many wrong rulings that everyone knows, everyone who has common sense knows what the right decision should be, what the right response should be. But what we see from these folks on the Supreme Court sometimes is that they will use all this legal jargon and tie themselves in pretzels to try and justify how they can come up with the wrong decision. A good example of that was Judge Gorsuch, who not too long ago in the Obergefell decision decided that the U.S. Civil Rights Act, which says you cannot discriminate based on race, sex, religion, and so forth, also included sexual orientation. And so in the Obergefell decision, he said, oh, it's legal for a man and a man or a woman and a woman to marry each other. Insane, utterly insane. How on earth can you go from your sex, whether you're male or female, which, by the way, that's all you are. You're either male or female, nothing else in between. Okay, so this idea of the left coming up with all these different genders is just utter nonsense. But at any rate, Gorsuch says that the Civil Rights Act, when it said that you can't discriminate based on sex, meaning if you are a male or a female, also included sexual orientation. Nowhere in that law does sexual orientation even come up as a premise, or even as a way of looking at the law. But he, in his infinite wisdom, decided that yes, it does, and so he sided with the leftist side of the court and passed that nonsense saying that same-sex marriage is legal. So because we see instances like that where the Supreme Court will make these crazy decisions, I just don't have a lot of confidence. I'm hoping and praying that they will make the right decision and that Judge Andrew Napolitano is correct in saying that he believes it's going to be a 5-4 with the right decision. We'll see, because again, these guys don't all, here's one thing they don't do. Here, for example, Sotomayor and Kagan, they should not even be on a Supreme Court. They should not have even been nominated to sit on a Supreme Court. Obama did that. And then they should not have been confirmed by the Senate, who, by the way, back when that happened, the Republicans had a majority and could have stopped it, but they didn't. The reason why I say they should not even be on a Supreme Court is because to be on a Supreme Court, you must say an oath that you solemnly swear to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. We have three Supreme Court judges who ignore the Constitution of the United States, who toss it out completely, who don't even think that it applies or should matter. And that's a tragedy. Then we have Judge Roberts, who will oftentimes side with them. He was nominated by George Bush and fooled all the conservatives who confirmed him and was given support by the American people who were conservatives. And then as soon as he gets on the court, what does he do? He starts leaning towards the left. He does like a lot of politicians do. We call them rhinos, Republican in name only, where they will pretend that they are conservative And they do that because they know that's what it takes to get elected. And then as soon as they get elected, they will then go to their leftist-leaning ways. You'll recall Judge Roberts was the one who brought us Obamacare, where he turned himself into, again, twisted himself like a pretzel to come up with justification for Obamacare, which there is no constitutional, legal authority or justification at all. Nowhere in our Constitution does it say that the federal government can force someone to purchase health care. It's insane. Just like Biden right now, again, just ignoring the Constitution. They don't care, even though he said an oath before the living God that they were going to support, protect, and defend the Constitution. They throw it all out the window, and here's Biden now trying to force on us a vaccine mandate, mandating that private companies that have 100 or more employees must get their employees vaccinated. That's insane. First of all, he doesn't have the authority to do that. He is not a king. He is not able to just decree something and it happens. He cannot make law. Our Constitution says that our law is made by the legislative branch. Those are the people in Congress, not coming from some dictatorial tyrant that we see coming out of this Biden regime. Well, first, he demands that you must have these vaccine mandates. But what is so interesting is that if you only have 99 employees or 98 employees, you don't have to comply. Now, where's the logic in that? Well, thank goodness, two separate federal judges have ruled that that Biden cannot do that. He cannot enforce. So they put a stay on that executive order, and thank goodness they did. In the meantime, companies should not comply anyway, and employees should not comply. I have not gotten the vaccine, and I am not going to get the vaccine. It is an experimental jab that we have known, documented, has caused hundreds of thousands of injuries and tens of thousands deaths. We know it has happened. It's been documented by the CDC, and in fact, it's been under-documented. I've heard reports that of the 17,000 deaths that have been reported, that is at least four times larger than that in actuality. Okay, so let's get back to the Roe v. Wade or the Supreme Court decision concerning abortion. And again, if you would like to join the call-in number is 904-831-0917. 904-831-0917. Okay, I'm going to read from an article from the Family Research Council, an article written by my good friend Tony Perkins. This was written just yesterday. In the most watched case of a generation, the eyes of the nation's pro-lifers were on a Supreme Court this morning as oral argument was held in Dobbs versus Jackson's Women's Health Organization, a case that will answer the question of whether all pre-viability prohibitions on elective abortions are unconstitutional. Okay, I just want to stop right there for a second. They talk about this idea of pre-viability. Viability meaning, can that child live on its own outside the womb? And if it cannot, and those on the left say that a mother should have the right to murder that baby, to abort it. I disagree with the whole pre-viability notion. At the point of conception, it is a human being with its own DNA, distinct and separate from the mother and the father, with its own individuality, with its own individual purpose, created in the image of God. That should be the entire issue right there. That is this a life? And the answer is yes, of course it is a life, regardless of whether or not it can live outside the womb at that time, if it's pre-viable or not at that time. Regardless of that, it is a human being made in the image of God. It has intrinsic worth, and that baby, that child, should not be murdered in the womb. So the fact that they're even talking about pre-viability prohibitions on elective abortions are unconstitutional, I think is outside the point anyway. The point should be made, is this a human being that deserves to be protected, deserves to live? And the answer is an emphatic yes. And then if you even go back to, again, those on the Supreme Court swore an oath to protect and defend our Constitution. And inextricably tied to our Constitution is the Declaration of Independence. And the Declaration of Independence says, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created by God with certain inalienable rights, among which are life. That's the very first one listed, life, liberty, and a pursuit of happiness or property. And that to secure these rights, government is instituted among men, deriving their just powers by the consent of the governed. In other words, here the Supreme Court has said an oath to protect and defend life. And here they are, knowing that life begins at conception. There's no doubting that at all, medically or spiritually or any way you want to look at it, ethically, morally, life begins at conception. And they are ignoring that altogether and talking about whether or not it's pre-viable prohibitions, pre-viability. Is the baby able to live outside the womb? That's beside the point. It is a life which deserves and should be protected, given that those inalienable God-given rights cannot be given by men. They cannot be taken away, and you can't give them away because they are given to us by God, the creator of life. Back to the article. That's legal speak for a case that could see the demise of Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood versus Casey. Decades-old cases that wrongly constitutionalized a right to abortion and whose consequences we have been living with ever since. You know, the left has a way of playing on words, and they call it abortion. I like to call it what it actually is, murder. You are killing a human being that has not been born yet, a pre-born human being. You are murdering it. They try to soften it up by saying abortion. Abort means you stop its life. That means that you are murdering that baby. Now back to the article. Many are hopeful after this morning's argument, again, this was written yesterday, the justices were mostly quiet when Mississippi's Solicitor General Scott Stewart defended his state law outlawing abortion after 15 weeks. Only Justice Sonia Sotomayor, a communist, and again, should not even be, this is me, this is an article, I call her a communist, and should not even be on a Supreme Court. She's a radical leftist. She goes on to say she showed serious antagonism to Stewart and at one point was downright hostile with her abortion apologetic, absurdly asking him, how is your interest anything but a religious view? That is insane. Why would she ask him that? How is your interest wanting to protect life in the womb? She calls that a religious view. I call it a practical view. But even if she said it's a religious view, I would have responded, Judge, you're correct. I believe in God. I believe that God creates life, and that is a religious view. But even outside of that, it is a medical view. Life begins at conception. That is a proven fact. It is an ethical view. It's a moral view. And for her to absurdly say, how is your interest anything but a religious view? Going back to the article, Stewart ably argued the state's case. However, pointing out that Roe and Casey are without solid footing and do injustice to what the Constitution says about a right to abortion, which is nothing. That is so true. There is nothing in our Constitution which says that a woman has a right to murder a baby in the womb. They try to use the 14th Amendment. Again, they tie themselves up like a pretzel. Try to use the 14th Amendment, which talks about a right to privacy. And because of this right to privacy, a woman can kill another person that is in her womb. That is insane. You have no right to privacy to kill anybody else just because of its position, just because of its location, just because of its age. You just can't kill someone else out of convenience because you want to, because you have a private right to do so. It doesn't even make sense. So just because that baby is located inside of her body and it is not her body that is inside of her, it's another body, it does not give her any kind of constitutional right to murder that baby. Okay, back to the article. Next up was the abortion advocates attorney, Julie Reichelman, joined by the Biden administration Solicitor General Elizabeth Prolegar. At this point, the justices turned up the heat a bit when Justice Samuel Alito quizzed Prolegar about whether Plessy v. Ferguson, an 1896 case that upheld racial segregation laws, was an erroneous ruling. Prolegar agreed it was egregiously wrong. The abortion advocates were also forced to acknowledge that they don't want to settle on any middle ground. They not only want to retain the undue burden standard from Casey, but admitted they want to keep Roe's viability standard too. But as Chief Justice John Roberts observed, we share the viability standard with the People's Republic of China and North Korea. Hardly countries we should be comparing ourselves to, a point made in a newly released FRC report on abortion around the world. All in all, things seem to go well for Mississippi and poorly for the abortionists. That is good news. And at least one Supreme Court clerk agreed, though it's sometimes tough to read into the seemingly always skies falling abortion proponents. They seem dismayed by this morning's arguments. Senator Josh Hawley, who is a Republican from Missouri, who along with Senators Mike Lee, Republican of Utah, and Senator Ted Cruz, Republican of Texas, filed an amicus brief in the case and remarked, "After listening to the argument, I believe this could be the case that finally reverses the great injustice of Roe v. Wade." Now, Family Research Council Catherine Beck Johnson, who helped file the Family Research Council amicus brief in the case, was also optimistic. "I certainly think they are going to uphold the law," meaning they're going to uphold the Mississippi law, she remarked. "While observing, we should be aiming to see Roe and Casey fully overturned," as Catherine told the crowd gathered outside the court this morning. "The pro-aborts claim that my daughter must be able to kill her child to achieve her goals. They claim that the child in my womb has no legal right to exist. We reject these lies. We know that my daughter and little girls everywhere not only deserve the right to exist, but are able to dream of their careers and families too. They know the child in my womb, though small, is a unique person who deserves to live. We fight for these children, the littlest and most vulnerable ones in our society. We call on the Supreme Court to finally recognize Mississippi and every other state's right to protect the unborn." Amen and amen. As the arguments continue to be analyzed, all eyes will be on the court this spring. We can likely expect an opinion before the end of June. As we patiently await this ruling, let us continue to hope and pray for justice to prevail and life to win, because across our land and around the world, we are depending on that. That was the end of the article. But note that he says that not only across the United States, but across the world, this decision is going to have a huge impact. Because before 1973, in the Roe v. Wade decision, where a incorrect Supreme Court gave a woman the right to murder a baby in her womb, before that happened, abortion did take place, by the way, and it was happening around the world. But once that happened in the United States, it accelerated around the world and in the United States, where tens of millions of babies, just in the United States alone, have been murdered in the womb since that very egregious decision was made. And hopefully we are going to see it being overturned here by this Supreme Court that thankfully President Trump was able to nominate three what we hope to be conservative judges. Conservative meaning that they will uphold their oath of office and defend the Constitution and declare that life in the womb is of intrinsic value, is protected by our Constitution, not to be murdered in the womb. Let's hope that they do rule the right way. Now, here's something interesting. There were hundreds of people standing outside the Supreme Court, both those who were pro-life and those who were pro-murder, were standing outside protesting and trying to make themselves be heard. And, you know, I applaud them for doing that. I mean, if that's what you want to do, I would not do that simply because, first of all, the decision is not going to be made until next year, until next June, perhaps July of next year. The decision won't even be made. And secondly, those on the Supreme Court should be making their decisions based on what the rule of law, what the laws of nature and nature's God tells them should be, not based on a crowd outside chanting slogans to get them to change their mind. If a Supreme Court judge is that fickle, where their mind will change simply because of they seeing a crowd standing outside, then that should right away disqualify them from even being on that Supreme Court. Their decisions should be based on their oath of office, their own ability to decide that they are going to make their decisions based on their oath of office to protect and defend our Constitution. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Mike Kill. I'm sitting in for Dr. Jean A. Youngblood here on Let's Face the Issues. I'm going to continue after the break at the top of the hour. And would invite you to call in. The call-in number is 904-831-0917. That's 904-831-0917. And we're going to be talking about some new things. We're going to leave this topic, and instead we're going to be talking about how this new surge in homeschooling that we are seeing happening before our eyes. We're going to talk a little bit about that. We're also going to talk about how healthcare is not a communal resource. So stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. We'll join you after this brief break at the top of the hour.
This is Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood from First Conservative Baptist Church and Conservative Theological University in Jacksonville, Florida. To learn more, visit conservative.edu.